Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Joe Scheidler. If you listen to this program often, you'll hear us talk with Eric Scheidler. But Joe is Eric's father, and he is the founder of the National and is the National Director of the Pro-Life Action League. And in fact, Joe has been involved in the pro-life movement for 44 years now, just within months of Roe v. Wade, the terrible 1973 Supreme Court decision that basically legalized abortion on demand, and with its companion decision to Doe v. Bolton, gave us abortion on demand for all 9 months. Joe Scheidler has written a very important book called Racketeer for Life, and it tells his story. Mr. Scheidler, so great to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Jerry, it's an honor.
Okay. Well, you've been called a racketeer, and not just in some minor way. You've actually had to go to court and to defend yourself as if you were a member of the mafia because you've been involved in pro-life activities, peaceful pro-life activities, no violence involved, and yet you've been accused as if you were first a trust or a monopolist, if you will, convicted under antitrust laws, and then RICO statutes as if you were a mafia. So go ahead and wax eloquent. Tell us your story about Racketeer for Life.
Well, I was picketing a pro-abortion meeting, the National Abortion Federation Convention, out in Kansas when I was served. And they served me on an antitrust charge, a federal antitrust charge. And, of course, that went into, we had to go before the judge and all that, and it took 2 years for that to be dismissed. And basically, we won that one. We were not guilty of violating the antitrust laws, but...
Can I stop you for a second? Can I stop you? Can you explain,
sure,
for somebody who might not understand exactly what an antitrust law means and why were such laws passed? Surely not for anybody peacefully picketing any cause of any kind, right?
It's taking business away from somebody somewhat illegally, and we had nothing. You know, if we were taking business away from them, we were simply converting women who really didn't want to have an abortion but needed some counsel. And that's all we were doing. And if they lost some money, that was their problem. You know, we weren't getting any money, the same way with racketeering. We were not getting a thing. And the racketeer is supposed to get rich. He gets triple what, the ordinary criminal would get from the same activity. And so he has triple damages, part of the punishment for being found guilty of racketeering. So the whole thing was mystic and made up and very hard to fight because they could bring in anybody they wanted to tell as many lies as they wanted. And we didn't have any real proof except that we had no hand.
Okay, your phone was just breaking up at that point.
Oh, sorry.
But so go back to Kansas. So you basically you were charged on the antitrust laws, and thankfully you were found. That was you were vindicated 2 years later.
Right.
Then what happened next?
Well, they amended it to RICO, to racketeering, and that took 28 years in court before we
28?
Were actually 28 years altogether. We were served in 1986 and didn't get it settled until just 2 years ago.
Right? Oh my goodness!
We finally got a little settlement, just a few $1,000s, but we did win. But we went before the Supreme Court 3 times, which is unique. We can't find another case that has gone before the Supreme Court more than twice.
Yeah.
But we had to go up there to find out if they could use racketeering, which we didn't think they could, but they ruled unanimously, 9-0, that they could use racketeering against us, a social movement. And then we had to go to court. We had a 10-week court hearing with witnesses and so on. And then we went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and we got an 8-1 decision against the National Organization for Women and in our favor. But when it came back down to the appellate court, it was stopped again. They said that the Supreme Court had not thoroughly investigated all the charges and that three of the predicate acts had not been considered, and so we had to go back all the way to the Supreme Court again. And then we got an 8-0 decision. One of the justices had not heard the case, it was new, and so we had an 8-0 ruling that we were not guilty. But then we didn't finally get the whole thing settled until just about 2 years ago. They came through with a check for our expenses.
Wow. And through this all, the whole process, Tom Brekka, who is the founder of the Thomas More Society and director of that organization, he basically put his law practice on the line in order to help you, and that launched him into helping not only you, but David DeLeiden and all kinds of other pro-life activists.
Oh, yes. They have over 100 clients right now.
Wow.
That they're helping. And Tom was working for a firm in Chicago, Abramson and Fox, and doing all this pro bono work, we thought, and then suddenly I get an enormous bill from Abramson and Fox. And I couldn't possibly
okay,
you, say
your phone is breaking up sometimes, huh?
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Go on. So you got this bill, and then what?
Well, we paid as much as we could, and then they called in Tom, and they said, either you're going to drop this case and stay with our firm, or you're going to stay with this case and leave our firm. Well, that was a terrible decision to have to make, but Tom made it in our favor, and so he was basically on his own. We didn't have any money to pay him, and we had his office was in an abandoned building. They had one elevator working. He didn't have heat in the winter or air conditioner in the summer, and he stayed that way for a year or two until we started bringing some money in, and he founded the Thomas More Society, and now it's one of the best law firms in the country for this type of law.
That is such a neat, neat story. So when he decided to go ahead and go alone, you know, and leave the cushy law firm and so forth, what year was that about?
Oh, that was about, and I'm not real sure. My
early 90s?
Yeah, something like that.
Something and like that, okay.
When did Tom leave Abramson and Fox, actually?
We're on the air.
87.
Yeah. Okay, so 30 years ago. Well, that's really an amazing story, though, of sacrifice and so forth. But now,
well, you know, it was very hard, too, because his wife, it turned out, she was teaching in high school, and she had just ended her teaching career. And just about that same time, he comes home and says, I've just dropped my job at the law firm.
Wow.
And they didn't know what to do. They were really in a bind. So she had to go back to teaching and resumed her job there at teaching Spanish in high school.
You know, I can't help but think of that verse, you are the salt of the earth, you know, you are the light of the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, God bless you. God bless Tom Brekka. God bless his wife. God bless your wife. Your wife got involved with you with the pro-life activities. I understand you left a job with... Was it Field Enterprises, or you were an ad executive? No, what were you doing? You a PR executive or something?
Well, I was with a firm that was public relations, and I had, for instance, Marlite Paneling and Libya Cheese, Shakespeare Fishing Tackle, you know, were my clients. And when I read Roe v. Wade, and especially Doe v. Bolton, which gives the parameters of 9 full months of abortion, and so a child was not safe, I couldn't abide by that, and I talked to my boss, and he said, well, we'll leave you on for 3 months until your baby is born, and was pregnant with our first little girl, Kathy. And he said, we'll keep you on the payroll, and you'll keep your insurance, you know, and that was very, very helpful. So then I could start right out fighting abortion. And but I realized that the government had withdrawn any protection, any value to my child.
Mm. That's amazing. And so you went on then by 1974, just a year after Roe v. Wade, but within a year of the decision, you started the Pro-Life Action League and went full time into pro-life work, right?
Well, we had different, and it went for a while. We called it Friends for Life, and I was working with a priest and some business people and some lawyers, And Friends for Life really got, they got a little too restrictive, and so that's when I started Pro-Life Action League.
Uh-huh.
It came from Friends for Life because I didn't want to have wait for a board to come up with decisions, because a lot of the things we did we had to do immediately. You know, you would hear there was going to be an abortionist giving a big talk at the University of Chicago or something, and you'd have to be there. And you couldn't wait for a board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why with the Pro-Life Action League, I was the head of the board and the executive director, and we could get things done much more quickly and more efficiently.
When Eric Scheidler, who, as I said, has often been a guest on this program, when he was born, then you were involved full-time and your wife in pro-life activities. Now, I want to go back to the Supreme Court for a second. Did I understand you to say that the Supreme Court ruled in all these different cases for you, but they ruled with, like, high majorities? I mean, a lot of times the Supreme Court will say 5-4, but in, you know, 8-1, 9-0. Is that right?
Right. That, yeah, 8-1 was the lowest we ever got. We always had either 9-0 or 8-0, and once we got the 8-1.
So here's the bottom line. The Supreme Court was saying, look, a law that was written to put away mafia mobsters should not be used for people protesting, you know, some sort of social issue, whether you agree
right.
with those protesters or not. That's the end
right.
of the story. Is that right?
That was the story, and that was the whole attitude before the court. That you could hear their arguments, and their own arguments were very, very good. They'd say, well, Martin Luther King, was he a racketeer? You know, because he was marching and leading large groups in protest against ill treatment of his race and so on. But we were doing basically the same thing to save the unborn. And so even Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was not particularly known to be pro-life, was very helpful for us in fighting in the court for our being exonerated.
I'm delighted to hear that. I really am. All right, we have about a minute and a half left. What would you like to say that we haven't said that can be brought out in the book Racketeer for Life?
Well, the book was written basically to fill in people that have not, you know, been keeping up with the movement, because we got started in the very beginning, and a whole lot of things that are now just taken for granted had to be discovered, you know, the publication, putting out the flyers, to face the truth tours, where you go around the country with actually the pictures of babies in the womb and babies that have been aborted at the same age. And you have to, there were motion pictures made, and many of the things that are being done now, we didn't know about. We started out, I wrote a book called 99 Ways to Stop Abortion. Because people were asking, what do you do? What do you do? And I kept, you know, on the phone and writing letters. And so I just wrote a book on the 99 ways. And the last chapter was write the next chapter yourself. And we got a whole lot of fantastic advice and suggestions from people all over the country. So we were busy, but I would say to people, do something pro-life every day. Even if you come to the end of the day and you haven't done anything, say a prayer or start talk to somebody about abortion and what it's done to our country, and the whole attitude we have now toward life in general. We now have assisted suicide. We're losing our respect for human life.
Yes.
So we have to do something pro-life every day.
Hmm. All right. Thank you so much for being with us, Joe Scheidler. The book, by the way, was co-written by another one of your sons, I believe, correct?
Right, Peter Scheidler.
Peter Scheidler. And the name of the book is Racketeer for Life. The website is prolifeaction.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Jerry.
Bye-bye.